All right, mate, I'm Ryan and I'm out of the Cribs.
I'm Gary. I play bass in Cribs. So.
The drummer would be with us except that he's having drum issues. Yeah. What are those particular drum issues?
I have no idea. I ignore everything to do with drums. I don't do drums. Yeah, I don't do drums. You know what I mean?
I think the drum issue is the fact that drummers can't stop pratting about with their equipment, basically. You know what I mean? That's all it is. I wouldn't mind, actually. He's just been banging his snare drum in my ear in the dressing room for such a long time that I think if he combusted it, would be no great loss at this moment.
That's pretty harsh, though, because if he combusted, my mum would be gutted, you know what I mean? Because we're all brothers, like, she wouldn't want to be one kid down just because of an American tar out of.
I didn't know the album were out over here yet. Like, I never got a gold disc or nothing, so, like, yeah. As far as I'm concerned.
The gold disc didn't come, well...
But the thing is, though, it's like, even in England, our first album only came out, like, the second album came out less than a year after the first one, so we have been banging them out pretty quick.
So, as I mentioned to you as we were walking kind of to the room here, we have stolen the Kaiser Chiefs dressing room. But how'd you hook up? Because they did ask you to come on this tour, so how did you, is it because you were from the same part of town, so to speak, or?
Yeah, like, what happened was, like,
did you play like their club night in Leeds or?
Nah, we never used to go there. We hated
their club night in Leeds.
Yeah, but you know.
Okay, let's go back over to where they're all eating and we'll tell Peanut and the boys that.
I think Ricky knows that I never liked it. But no, what happened was like that. We never used to go to their club night, but then there was another one down road that their spin off sort of club night. And that were really good. Like, we used to go to that every week. And
Ricky used to work serving drinks behind the bar. So we used to sit and talk to him all night. He'd give us a few free beers and that. And then, like, you know, because we already had a record out by this point. So we'd play in his bar, you know what I mean? We'd play in bar. And then these lot got, you know, really big straight away. So it was just a case of just, like, we'd go out on tour with them just because it were a few Leeds, you know, a few guys from around Leeds just having a laugh on tour and having a laugh in America. Like.
I think we all knew that we got on well and we all knew we enjoyed a drink together. So it kind of made sense to just do it across, like, the world, I guess.
This is from your bulletin board. I just want to read you this because it just...
Right, I ignore the bulletin
board. Okay, so you ready?
I used to love the bulletin board.
There you go. In Glasgow, you see the same set of girls at every King Tut's gig, at every Barrel Ends gig, at every Carling Academy gig. They all stand wearing practically the same clothes, and obviously, what is the height of indie fashion of the moment, they all stand at the back, or more likely in the bathroom fixing their hair, then after the gig, traipse off to Barfly for the after show, still looking intact. That is what I take to mean seester. I have mates who are scenesters, and it doesn't make them bad people or anything. It just seems they don't have their own sense of style, being into music or clothes, so jump from scene to scene depending on what is the height of cool at the time. Yeah. Jeez, I just thought it was a cool pop song, not worthy of an entire subject on your bulletin board.
Well, I always just call them hipsters, you know, the people that stand there and look.
But hey, hipster doesn't work as well.
I know, No, it doesn't work quite as well. But, like, scenester, no, but NME and people like that are using the word all the time now. So I guess it is getting to be more of a used term, which is all right. But, I mean, there's nothing wrong with these people. I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with it. I just think that no one's had a swipe at them yet, and everybody's got to have had a swipe taken at them at one point or another. So. You know what I mean? Maybe there is something wrong with him. I don't know, because I don't talk to him. But
I was just sick of the fact that you could go to punk rock shows, which is something I've always done for many years, and all of a sudden, you know, all of a sudden you're the odd one out. You know what I mean? Because you're the one who's not wearing like the designer labels, and it's like, what's that about? At a place like that, it doesn't make sense to me. It just baffled me, you know what I mean? And I always find it a little bit frustrating.
Bold political statement, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. That's
big stuff. Worthy, like I said, of thousands upon thousands of,
Posts on the bulletin board.
Posts on the bulletin board. Okay, but the album in general has a pretty, to use a good term, cheeky attitude just in the titles alone.
Yeah.
Mirror Kissers, things aren't going to change. We can no longer cheat you. Now, since I haven't, I finally just read the lyric sheet because I just got the promo.
Yeah.
But let's talk about with the new fellas. You know, you're definitely making a statement on all the shite involved in rock and roll here.
Well, we had like
you and know, life, but
well, yeah, I'd like to think that it is a broader thing. It's for every, you know, a broad statement for everybody and you know everyone's life. But nah, it's just like from last year after we did the first album, we were in, you know, the first album were quite like quite happy actually, but like. After that, like, we'd been on top for so long that we realised that, like, there is actually, like, you know, a lot of crap involved with, like, you know, everything what we were doing. And most of it, we met a lot of, like, fake people. So, I don't know, the album ended up really sarcastic and kind of bitter, but it wasn't really intended to be like that. It's just, I don't know, it's just that, they're like, because we're from, you know, from Northern England, so we've naturally got, you know, we call a spade and stuff like that, so you can't really, you know, we had to... If we weren't happy with something, we had to kind of write about it.
I think, like, it's just, I don't know, to dumb it down, it's just, like, your typical sort of indie, like, you know, I don't mean indie guilt, but, you know, just that whole thing, like, where you've got this sort of, I just found so many aspects of, like, the industry just weird and, like, really frustrating as well. Like,
you mean like an I'm all right, me, take drugs, don't eat?
Yeah. Yeah, that were meant as, like, a completely sarcastic statement because we were in, like you know, we were, you know, like, there's the Libertines in England and stuff like that.
Oh, yes, them.
But we'd always been, like, you know, we'd done a few gigs with them and stuff like that, but what we're going on in London is, like, they were actually, you know, like, you get, like, you know, you were getting, like, 16-year-old kids who would actually think that lyrics like that is cool. And to see people sing along to that, taking it seriously, it was so ridiculous. Like, the lyrics weren't meant to be, you know, it wasn't like we were advocating it, saying this is what everyone should do. It was just kind of, like, it just seemed be the way that everyone seems to be living at the time, you know what I mean? So we thought we'd put it in as, like, you know, that's kind of, you know, just because that is what people are doing in England, whether you like it or not. Like, a lot of people are just doing drugs and, like, thinking that that's a cool thing.
In this day and age, isn't it amazing?
It's a comment on the fact that, like, a lot of the kids who were coming to the gigs were trying to, they assumed that were a cool, you know, thing to do, like, and like you get. I remember this is like a couple of years ago.
They didn't actually go wrong with it, but
it's just weird when you get kids who, like, come up to you at gigs and, like, you know, think they were impressing you by, like, offering you, like, lines of coke or whatever, and you're just like, you know, come on, like, for God's sake, you're a 16-year-old kid, like, and you're obviously only doing it to try and impress the band, and it's just stupid, and, like, you know, I can't understand a lot of that.
Well, you know, it's funny, and I'm not making any band comparisons here, because actually people are comparing you to all sorts of bands, which always happens with a relatively new band. And yet, you know, I was listening to Lost in the Supermarket by The Clash, and I thought, yeah, that's the same kind of thing. They're kind of making fun of, you know, society and where it's at, and that it's ridiculous, you know?
That's what it is, and, like, when we were recording it in the studio, we would say, maybe we shouldn't be singing these lyrics. Like, you know, maybe, like, people get wrong and stick. And Edwin Collins, who were producing it, he said to us, if people listen to that song and think it's serious, then you don't want them people liking your band anyway, because they must be stupid, you know what I mean? And he's right. It's like, you know.
So this is Edwin Collins of Orange Juice and Never Had a Girl Like You Before. That is impressive stuff. That is a nifty producer to have for the second album. How did that come about?
Well, like, I don't know how it came about. Someone just said, like, we were looking for producers for his album, and someone said Edwin Collins wants to work with you. So we were like, definitely. So we'd always, like, you know, Orange Juice and all that kind of stuff. So we went down to his studio to meet him, and we just got on really well with him. You know, he's from exactly the same mindset as us, because he always said that he felt that they were underrated and stuff, an underrated band, and we felt like that after our first album. So who kept, like,
he would understand.
Yeah, we got on really well. We had, like, loads of the same ideas. You know, and we all enjoyed a drink. So we went down for first few sessions, just all had a few drinks, recorded some stuff, and it was like the perfect guy to record for us. It becomes more of a kind of bitter kind of record.
Well, and it is a, how shall I say this? There's a lot of variety in the album, because it starts out and you think you can hear one thing, and then by the time, you know, I'm hearing kind of a vaudeville vocal on there, and I'm like, whoa. And how much did Edwin kind of contribute to the whole, the sound?
Edwin, like, you know, it was smart enough to, like, because if it were up to us, we'd probably record his albums on 4-track. You know, we've never worried about, like, you know, fidelity and stuff that much. We always thought it was more about the songs, and, like, a lot of his favourite bands, like, sound quite rough anyway. But Edwin was sort of like, you know, there's no shame in making your stuff sound better. And it helped us to, like, you know, kind of control, like, the, you know, our more, you know, rough tendencies. And, like, it helped us, like, he had ideas for, like, he'd say, well, why don't you put some piano on there? And we'd be like, nah, we don't like piano, man. Like, you know, forget that. And he'd play us it, and it'd just be a cool, like, thing. And, you know, at the end of the song, like, it's not like there's, like, big, like, piano solos on there. They're just, like, cool little bits that made stuff sound better.
All, like, vaudevillian kind of stuff, though, that were already in place before. And it's not like, I mean, like, we had actually, kind of, like, from the first record, we'd already kind of progressed quite a lot anyway. But he just made the transaction smoother, you know what I mean? Even though he'd already progressed, he just kind of, like, helped us along with it, that's all.
So what is the strangest thing that's happened at a gig so far? Because you just alluded to something, so I might as well go there.
There's loads, I could tell you loads. Like, when we played at the Barrowlands in Glasgow, which is like a huge venue, it's like 2,000 capacity, we were supporting Kaisers again. And there were a fighting crowd, so I thought, I'll do a stage dive now and go for a crowd dive while the security guards are, like, breaking this fight up. So there's no security, and the crowd threw me back on stage. I smacked my head on a metal bar, knocked myself clean out, woke up on stage, like, thinking, I had no idea where I was. And then, this is like, I woke up, like, I was out unconscious for about a minute or something. I woke up with people throwing water over me, looked to the side, noticed it was like, I was at a gig, remembered what I was doing, got up, carried on and did the gig, but I was concussed, so I was playing the last two songs while, like, being sick over my shoulder and stuff on my guitar.
Lovely. So, here's the last thing that we like to do, and this fills up the rest of the hour, and here's the little secret. We're going to make a Cribs musical sandwich.
Right.
And here's how that works. Two of your songs as the bread.
Okay. Hey Seensters should be the first Cribs song, I think.
Hey Seensters, okay. And what's going to be the close in the other half of the bread?
Maybe another number.
Okay, another number from the first record. Okay, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow by the Shirelles. I'm loving it already.
I want Down at the Rock and Roll Club by Richard Hell.
Richard Hell, yeah. Beautiful.
I think that then we'll go for...
I've got one. Tell Me Why by the Beatles.
Falling and Laughing by Orange Juice.
Autumn Almanac by the Kinks. I've got Oh Bondage Up Yours, X-Ray Specs. How about a bit of Huggy Bear? You can give us a bit of Huggy Bear, can you? How about Her Jazz?
A Little Trouble Girl by Sonic Youth. No, Modern Way by
You Can Have It All.
Yeah, that's my favourite.